Okay, today I'm with Jono Spence. Thanks for agreeing to talk to us today, Jono.
No worries.
From JSC Comms. We get straight to it. What is it exactly your business does?
We are a PR and sponsorship activation company that specialises in the world of horse racing, rugby and cricket mainly. And we also do quite a lot of different events across London for charity and testimonials and things like that.
So you've, just going back to your sort of beginnings, you went to Harrow,
yeah,
which is a hotbed of racing. Quite a few of my interviewees have hailed from Harrow. And you're also a bit of a sportsman, first team football, rugby and cricket. Was there time for horse racing? Was that your main interest or obviously just other sports?
Yeah, my housemaster, I remember the first day when I was 13 arriving and ordering a racing post every day, and I remember it causing a lot of humour with my housemaster and house tutor, as the only racing post used to come to my room every morning. So definitely found time for that as well as playing lots of sport.
Was there racing in your family background?
Yeah, I grew up. My uncle David Morley, mum's brother, was a trainer, and he trained Celeric for dad, who was bred at home to win the Ascot Gold Cup in 1997, which was definitely the highlight of my sort of racing career, I guess, in terms of ownership. When Pat Edrie took a pull, upsize classic cliche, just approaching the final furlong, it was a pretty special day. And then Dad was senior steward at the Jockey Club and was involved in lots of different racing politics. And so yeah, very much in my veins.
Right, so I saw, well, I've read reading up on you, you described it extremely well connected, so this would explain, at least in the racing industry, why you would be.
Yeah, I always used to go racing with my uncle and dad as well, as much as I could sort of growing up. So I guess I met a lot of people from as a teenager to the early days. I remember Hugo Bevan at the early days of Windsor Monday nights and things like that. It was a great memory for my early sort of memories of racing.
Now, you worked for Craigie Taylor originally. Was that similar sort of work?
Yeah, so having grown up in racing, I thought it was really important to try and go and get experience in other sports. I mean, obviously, having played rugby and cricket, I obviously enjoyed that. So I did work experience at Craigie Taylor during the university holidays, and then they offered me a job working full-time there after Bristol, and worked on Vodafone sponsorship of the England cricket team, famous Grouse Scotland rugby team, and then I did a lot of darts in the old days before Barry Hearn got hold of it. I used to run the press offices down in the sort of Circus Tavern and up in Blackpool, and then also they had Sporting Index when spread betting sort of first started. We looked after all their PR in the early days when Compton set it up with Lindsay McNeil.
Okay, so you left in December 2003.
Yeah,
and started JSC in 2004. Why? What prompted you to do your own thing?
I guess I recognised the fact I sort of felt I'd got a lot of experience in the 6 years working at Craigie Taylor. They were a fantastic company to work for. The chairman, Marcus Robertson, who's actually still on the board of the PDC, actually the darts. And so I sort of see him down there when I go every year. But I sort of felt I'd sort of got that experience and felt there was an opportunity to sort of specialise as a horse racing and betting sort of PR agency, and also wanting to also try and get rugby and cricket accounts. But really, the main reason for setting it up is I felt there was the opportunity.
So you didn't go into direct competition with them?
We came to an arrangement, I think is probably the best way of describing it, for any clients that decided to come with me, basically, and it was fine. It was still very amicable. I still see a lot of them, in London still now.
So why did you decide to go down the PR route?
People, I guess. I love working with people. PR for me is all about relationships, and as well as the sort of creative side and the sort of activation side. I think Every day is different, and that's what I love about this job, is sort of every day is a new challenge. Can be a bit frustrating, I guess, because PR, you're only really as good as your next job, so to speak, for each client. But I love what I do. I'm very lucky.
Okay, so was it, I'm assuming that your love of playing sport was a motivation for specialising in it?
Yeah, obviously not as a jockey, but the rugby days, I played rugby up to Bristol. I was captain of UE for 2 years down there. And I think that whole sort of team camaraderie, I mean, I'm still best mates with all the people I played sport with at school and university, and I think that's a lovely ethic to have in work as well. Sort of, it's a team game, and we're a pretty, you know, we're a very close team here at JSC.
It must have been quite nerve-wracking when you set up and you did your first commission. What was that? Can you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, well, the first account. Yeah, Kempton Park and JCB were our first two clients, actually. Understandably, there were a few clients that sort of, I think, wanted to see how we got on. But I remember working, Annalisa Balding, well, now she was Williams, then married to Andrew, was my sort of first teammate, and we literally worked out of my house in London, set it up, worked around the conservatory table every morning. I think our biggest coup probably for JCB, not that Cheltenham were that impressed, is when we painted the 50-metre square JCB logo on Cleve Hill, which sort of went down under... Well, they were official sponsors of the Triumph Hurdle. In those days, they sponsored Ruby Walsh as well. But they were a great client to work for, and it's good to see they're still involved now.
Excellent. So I'm looking down through what you offer. Can you sort of describe briefly each one, what it actually is?
Well, the sponsorship activation side, Investec would be probably the best example of sponsorship activation. We've worked for them on their sponsorship of the Autumn Internationals, the rugby, the cricket. They sponsored all Test cricket in the UK. Obviously, the Investec Derby, and then the GB Women's Hockey Team. And basically, it's all about our relationship with the media and the different press rooms in cricket, rugby. It was actually amazing, having not worked in cricket and rugby for probably 10 years, walking back into the press rooms in both those sports. About 80% of the names and faces were still there. So it was great to catch up with them. And it's also about coming up with new, fresh ideas. I think I learned very quickly building relationship with the stars, the players, the cricketers and the rugby players, the jockeys, the trainers, is really, really important. And I think demonstrating to them what you can do for them has been a real sort of learning curve, I think, for both of us.
Right, okay. And cross-fertilisation, what is that?
I think some of the most creative ideas and biggest successes we've had is basically working across different sports. So, for example, Maddie Hinch, the GB Women's Hockey Team goalkeeper, we did a training sort of regime with the Tottenham Hotspur goalkeeper. It was Brad Friegel in those days. That'd be right, I think, from those days. So basically, they were sort of put through their paces, and we sort of compared, you know, how each of the sort of football train and then the hockey players train. And then we've also done some really fun stuff for 32 Reb. We had Paddy Brennan and Carl Frampton, the boxer. Basically, we got Paddy to go down to the Carl's gym and do some boxing with him and skipping and weights, and it was really good. And then Carl went down to Fergal O'Brien's yard and basically, you know, went on the equisizer and loved it. I think content, this digital content era, as we sit here looking at a camera, is obviously, that's something I've noticed the most and learnt the most in the last sort of probably 3 to 4 years, is that, you know, sadly, you know, newspaper circulation figures are in huge decline, and the digital content is really everything. So we're able to provide, as a company, videos ready to go. Through Sam Laurie in our office here, basically he can provide the newspapers that they can, you know, really good quality content that they can use online. So that's been the big change, really. Although the relationships, obviously, with the individuals is still key and crucial, particularly on the bigger features, you know, when they're doing interviews with the likes of Paul Nichols or Ryan or, you know, clients like that who we represent.
Yeah, and you must be building relationships all the time, because just to sort out that with Fergal and other people, you know, they must, that must be a massive part of the business.
Yeah, and I think in racing, you know, I like to think, you know, we've built up a really good client base. We've got a real different array of clients, from race courses to bookmakers to individuals, and 9.5 times out of 10, they sort of work, it all seems to work pretty well across the board. And I think that's the sort of really important thing for us, that sort of angle.
Now, how do you take on jobs that you don't actually believe in? And if so, how do you work around that?
Good question. No, we don't always take on client approaches. Well, I've turned down a number of clients since I set up JSC. The representation side, it's a very small pond you're fishing in, trying to get jockeys and trainers, sponsors, and you know, it's not a big pond. Also, some of the younger jockeys obviously can't be sponsored by bookmakers, so it's even harder to get them. You know, it's the old thing, racing suffers from lack of high street names on as part of the sponsorship portfolio. There are very few, you know, Investec, Randox Health, they're not really high street names. Yes, they're fantastic sponsors of two of the most iconic races in the world, but I would love to see a Santander or a Waitrose or a, you know, like the cricket Waitrose sponsors the England cricket team for ages. And I'd love to be able to sort of attract some new sort of blue chip companies, high street brands into racing.
Now, you mentioned jockeys and bookmaker sponsorship. There's, see, today even Racing Post are talking about it again. What's your personal opinion
of
jockeys being sponsored by bookmakers?
I think it's all so closely monitored now, and it's all, there's no sort of whisper, you know, secret phone calls going on. It's all very open stuff. And I think, you know, the advertising standards agencies have got involved a little bit on the sort of the blogging and Twitter side, social media side in particular, that, you know, you have to put sort of hashtag ad to make sure, you know, people are aware that it's a bookmaker sort of blog. You know, of course it's right, you know, underage gambling is a huge problem in this country, and but I don't think bookmakers sponsoring jockeys is, you know, adding to that. I think, you know, people, it's going back to the digital content. People want to hear from the Nico de Boinvilles, Unibet, you know, Nicky Henderson. You know, they want to hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak. They don't want to wait and read it in the newspaper 3 days later.
Yeah, instant gratification these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting you say there's a big problem with underage gambling. Do you think there actually is, or is that hyperbole? I mean, I find it very difficult to imagine that a child could get a bet on, especially online, where most of the business is done these days.
I mean, I don't know the stats. It was probably a bit of a generalisation. But I would thought it is pretty easy to do it online with credit cards, and, you know, you can basically, I imagine it's pretty easy steps to setting up an account and away you go. I'm not, you know, I may be talking out of turn there, but I, you know, it's clearly, there wouldn't be so much focus on it, I don't think, in the press if there wasn't a problem.
So it does, the sort of toxicity of gambling these days make it more difficult to promote horse racing and get the big sponsors that you'd like to get?
Yeah, we got very, you know, bookmakers play a massive and very, very important part in the racing industry. You know, without their sponsorship, racing would be in serious trouble. Prize money would be even worse. But it is, the betting angle from first experience is a real turn off to a lot of, you know, particularly the financial sector. Like, you know, we got quite far down the line with Santander doing a big sponsorship deal, and it went to their board, and, you know, they said, how can we sponsor where there's gambling with money involved when we're supposed to be looking after people's money? So I sort of get what they're saying. And then Gucci were the same. We got very close to a sort of Global Oaks sponsorship, worked on it for years and years, trying to get it across the line. Again, final decision, and they went into show jumping instead, and are huge sponsors in that now.
Okay, Jono, we talked in part one about horse racing and maybe that gambling, you know, that makes it a bit more difficult to promote. Do you think horse racing generally does a good job in selling itself across the population?
Across the population, I think the iconic events do. I think the Investec Derby, your Royal Ascots, your Goodwoods do a brilliant job at promoting themselves because they are the best events. Cheltenham Festival, the Grand National, people want to go and see the best horses and the best jockeys in action. So I think, of course, racing could do a better job at promoting itself. But I think it's very naive for a lot of horsemen to think that racing can just jump off the racing pages into the news headlines without, you know, a lot of thought going into the sort of campaigns. You know, there's a reason why for the Derby we work with ambassadors from outside the sport, because, you know, it means we're on the front pages of Stella magazine or the Sunday Times magazine, you know, things like that. Those publications which Investec wants to be in. They don't want to be in, you know, they're targeting a very specific audience. I think the jump racing fraternity probably do a better job than the flat sometimes, in terms of, you know, the horses also are around for a lot longer, so people become, you know, they have that love affairs with your Altiors, your Sprints and Sacras, your Best Mates, you know, they love following those horses. And you also have, you know, these fantastic characters like Bryony Frost coming through. But definitely the biggest, you know, flat racing has the biggest marketing tool in Frankie Dettori, and probably Her Majesty the Queen and her patronage of the sport are two massive assets.
Now, I did a little bit of research online. I've often found this from a personal point of view that non-racing people ask what I do for a job. They either think that it's supported by people that sit around recycling their dough money in betting shops, or it's the toffs, in inverted commas, and not a lot in between. That's the perception. I did a poll on Twitter. We had about 800 people, you know, sort of took part in it, but 70% agreed with that, that the perception of non-racing people is, you know, do you think that is a problem? Do you agree that that is the perception of the general public?
Yes, I guess if you're looking at from the outside window in, you're looking at very rich people owning racehorses. But as I know from working it, there are syndicates like Highclere and Chelsea Thoroughbreds and, you know, racehorse ownership schemes that actually make it very affordable to have shares in racehorses. And one of the things I adore about racing is the huge cross-section of people you meet from society. You know, from everyone to people who are looking at the stable staff, looking after the horses, to the owners, the trainers, the jockeys, the, you know, sponsors, the race course staff. I mean, it's a massive industry. Mm. So that may be the perception. But I think, you know, racing gets such a good show in terms of the daily coverage at the moment, although it is in decline a bit. You know, it does sort of cross the whole of society and, you know, from the red tops to the broadsheets, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, it's the second big, highest, largest viewed sport in the UK. But if people that aren't involved looking out, looking in from outside, they can't really aspire to be a toff because they aren't born into that sort of thing, and they don't really want to aspire to be one of those people in the betting shop. So what could race, what could, as a PR company, what would you try and, you know, how would you try and get engage those people that think like that they're basically alienating themselves by their perception of the sport?
Well, there's, I mean, again, one of the great things about racing is there's loads of different entry points, isn't there? There's lots of different career options. You know, you can basically cherry pick your way into the different interests you have, whether that's working in the industry, but also from a simple race day perspective. You know, you can pick which enclosure you go into. You can pick if you want to go for a meal on a race course or just keep it, you know, for a day out on the hoof, so to speak, with a group of mates. You can go, you know, I think the great thing is you can go on a stag do or with a group of friends or with your family or take a team of clients, you know, and it's all different experiences and different locations on the race course.
Yeah. Okay, so how does promoting cricket, rugby and other sports compare to racing? And do they appear to straddle the social spectrum a lot better than racing?
I think cricket's done, although I'm a huge fan of Test cricket, I think what they've done with 2020 cricket has really, you know, engaged with that younger audience. And I think racing has a big job to do in embracing new ideas like city racing. Obviously, I'm involved in it, so I am a bit biased, but I think it will really help engage more and younger people into the sport, and the closer you can take people to the action now. People want to be right up close and personal. They don't want to be 200 yards back from the action. People expect, their expectations are so much higher nowadays.
Now, you mentioned City Racing. Can you briefly tell us what your involvement is with that project?
Well, I've been involved for quite a number of years, about eight, and we basically handle all the PR and communications for City Racing, as well as being a shareholder in it. And I'm very excited about it. I think, you know, it's a massively exciting new initiative for racing. And I really hope, you know, we can get our first event off the ground as soon as possible.
Okay, and just going back to the nuts and bolts of your business, what would be your dream commission? What would something you'd love to get your teeth into that you've not yet been able to?
I would love to look after the sponsorship activation of something like the Six Nations, or the Ashes cricket, one of those big, really iconic sporting occasions. I think it would be fantastic to be involved with.
Now, this is, you probably haven't got long enough to explain this, but briefly, what would be the process from you getting the job to it actually taking place? How many people are involved?
Well, a client tends to go through a pitch process. So say four or five different agencies would be sent a PR brief. And then usually we would have about 2 weeks to brainstorm ideas, put together a presentation, and then go and present it to the prospective client. And I guess creativity, coming up with the most sort of creative ideas is pretty most of the time where you get the new business from. It's trying new things, trying particularly nowadays the digital, you know, really focusing on that as well. And race courses have, you know, they do have such a big cross section of people who go racing. It's almost targeting those different groups with different ideas.
Okay, now you've mentioned online and digital quite a lot already.
Yeah.
Has that become dominant now?
Yeah, I mean, like, massively dominant. Social media channels are, it's instant gratification, as you said earlier. It's live action, being close up, you know, up close and personal. People expect to be able to chat to the, you know, stars of the sport. And I think they are the jockeys, you know, as a rule, are really good at engaging when they're at the races. I mean, obviously, if they've just fallen off at the last, you know, it's probably not the best time to go and talk to them. But overall, they are, you know, they're really good at it.
Now, what would you say is your most powerful online publicity tool in your armoury for getting the word out there?
I would say our database. Our media databases are second to none. You know, I think we've got pretty much the whole, we basically section them into the different sports, and then have a main one for sort of more general, bigger stories. And obviously the press of a button, basically we can reach a huge amount of heads.
Mm. Now, what would be that's what we should be getting. what are the biggest obstacles and pitfalls you face as a PR company with a campaign?
I think sometimes you can be very unlucky. Obviously, you know, there are events that you have no control of. You know, if you're making an announcement about a new sponsorship or trying to announce a new initiative that a race course is introducing and a big story breaks, you know, an hour later, then you know full well you're going to be lucky to get an inch of copy. Whereas if the big story hadn't broken, you'd probably get a nice, you know, couple of paragraphs. So I think it's sometimes out of your control, but usually, as long as the story is newsworthy, it tends to get the column inches.
Are you also in the damage limitation business? You get a client ring up and say, oh no, something terrible's going on, you know, and you have to try and smooth it over. Is that part of the job as well?
Yeah, I know. We have a crisis management PR, we call that. And that can be anything really, from reputational stuff to the IRA. We had a coded where we had to evacuate Kempton on Boxing Day 1 year after a coded bomb warning. You know, there's a huge spread of things really.
Okay, John, can you tell us the jobs that you've been commissioned to do that you've been most proud of so far?
I think, well, there's been a number, what I would call, we've had some really good successes for clients. I think getting the zebra on the sacred turf at Lords was, when we launched the Investec sponsorship, was probably our biggest coup. It got front page of the Times and Telegraph and a number of other publications. The logo on Cleve Hill was pretty good. But there's been lots of, I mean, we've worked, it's also the sort of satisfaction. We run a lot of events. We ran our first motor neurone disease event last year, which was Strictly Come Cricket for Chris and Stuart Broad. And, you know, the first year it raised over 220,000. So there's huge satisfaction, you know, because it's probably over a year's worth of planning and hard work, and then when it does, you raise all that money for charity. It's a really magic feeling.
And on the negative side, have there been any absolute disasters?
No, I don't think we've had. Nothing springs to mind. Touch wood.
Now, you mentioned two of racing's what you describe them as influencers, the Queen and Frankie Dettori. Are there any up and coming young influencers as important in racing as they are in a lot of other, especially with the young people? You know, are there any that up and coming that you think could go across to the general public and bring people in at the moment?
I think Bryony Frost, without a shadow of a doubt, from a jumps perspective. I mean, we represent her and the media interest outside the sport. I mean, I judge it basically, if you suddenly, you know, after Froden won the other day and now, you know, he's going for the Gold Cup, you know, we're inundated with media requests on a daily basis for her. And it's one of the problems is it's obviously, she's got a full-time job, she works for Paul Nicholls, and quite rightly, that is her absolute commitment, and that's what she wants to be doing, is riding horses. So sometimes it's quite hard to find the balance, you know, and her making time to do these sort of media interviews. But for example, next week she's spending the whole day, literally just back to back doing media interviews with the likes of the BBC and Reuters and, you know, really, which is fantastic for racing.
Okay. Now, who do you think, going back to Bryony, you say you represent her. So was that basically working as an agent for people? Who else do you represent?
Yeah, so we look after a number of trainers and jockeys and presenters, from Gina Bryce to Alice Fox-Pitt, presenter-wise. Jockeys, we look after Nicola Curry, Josephine Gordon, Hayley Turner, Bryony, Ryan Moore, Paul Nicholls, Nicky Henderson, Jason Watson, we've just taken on the champion apprentice, Nico de Boinville. So we've got quite a big stable of trainers and jockeys. And basically we manage their commercial interests and then help a bit with the sort of PR side. Also, you know, the likes of Hugo Palmer and trying to find them sponsors like Paul Roger, who sponsor his yard. And working with them to make that sponsorship gel for both parties.
Right, so you umbrella quite a lot with this business. You sort of deal with quite a few aspects.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So who do you think is the best promoter of themselves as a person or a company in the betting industry? Who do you look at and think, oh, you know, you do a good job of that?
Paddy Power, I think, are very good. They're very impressive. I think because they're just very creative. They've obviously got a very good ad team and marketing team, and they, you know, they make a difference. They get recognised massively, both from an internal industry perspective, but also, you know, off outside the bookmaking world as well.
Yeah, they take a lot of gambles, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah, they but do.
Are they in house? Their PR team?
I think so. Yeah.
And then finally, what would you say are the golden rules for people and businesses who are looking to push themselves forward in this day and age? You know, how would you think they, what's the best way of doing it without putting yourself out of a job?
Yeah, well, I think it's being you. You know, people, it's being genuine. And I think it's work hard, play hard scenario is always a good one, a good guy to go down. That sort of work-life balance is very important.
Okay, and that's the secret to success.
Well, I don't know about that.
John O'Spence, thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Star Sports TV, our weekly magazine TV programme packed with tips, news and banter on the key sports events of the week. Check out the latest episode at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.